Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my next guest tonight is a singer-songwriter, grew up right here in Chicago. Willis Earl Beale put out an EP in 2016 called Through the Dark, then another under the name Nobody called Chaos Paradigm, and he's about to release more. Here's the genre-defying music of Willis Earl Beale.
A lot of people think that the lies they lead are the truth. They think that what they believe is the truth. They think that what they see is the truth. Well, I'm your boy Willis Earl Beale, and I don't believe that. Listen.
You may never know, but my conditions are the show.
Beale, also known as Nobody, has turned heads around the globe with his philosophical indie rock music and his edgy performances, whether it be playing Pitchfork, the music festival, or the big feature that was in The Reader last month, or asking a crowd at the Empty Bottle to sit on the floor and avoid applauding. Beale is continuing his career that started as an outsider artist who grew up right here in Chicago in the Inglewood neighborhood. Willis Earl Beale lives, well, everywhere. And he's my guest on the Download tonight. Willis, Nobody, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Hey, man. Thank you.
The reason I kind of jokingly say Willis and Nobody is you're making a transition in your persona. I mean, you were Willis Earl Beale, and you are now putting out music as the artist known as Nobody. Mm-hmm. Talk about that transition. Talk about not only the reason why you're doing it, but the challenges of getting your audience and music lovers and people who have followed your career to understand you're now called something different.
Well, it's quite a challenge because how I came into the industry was not how I wanted to come into the industry, and it happened so quick that it didn't give me I didn't know what I wanted at first. You know, I was always nobody. I am nobody. Always have been. Anybody who cares enough to actually look at my career, you'll see that on every record there's a symbol. Somewhere on the record, this symbol, I have a symbol that a nobody symbol. And that I tattooed on my arm a long time ago. So I am nobody. I'm not Willis Earl Beale. Willis Earl Beale is even more so now, a construct of society. He's a black person. He's a product of his environment. I don't know him. And nor do I, and it's a name that comes from somebody else. And it's got a bunch of history to it. And I'm not the first one, and I won't be the last one to want to be addressed as something different.
Right, to cast that aside.
But it's difficult because people don't take it seriously. They take things seriously, like they take normal names seriously, like a first name and a last name. And then to the extent they don't take it seriously, they would be more likely, it seems like, to ignore this project, because what they don't understand is that when I came out initially, I did not have as good a talent as I have now.
So you feel that Nobody is a better representation of the artist that you've developed?
You hit the nail on the head. Being Nobody is not being anonymous. It's actually very assertive. It's very definitive. See, I would love to just disappear and to not have to do anything. If I could just walk those streets and not be seen and not eat and not be a part of anything, I would love to do that. I'm talking about to actually not really exist in society or outside of society or in any capacity other than my consciousness. My consciousness is what I am.
Where do you think that ethos, that philosophy comes from? I mean, I'm interested because a lot of people would probably not go there, meaning they probably wouldn't.
They don't.
Yeah, but where does it, why do you?
I don't know. And that's the mystery and the beauty of life. And that's the reason why categorization and the marginalization that happens, I attribute to not to get Afrocentric, because I really don't want to be portrayed in that way. But it's attributed to simple prejudice, not like prejudging a certain kind of racism. Even people that admire me, they admire me because, oh, brother, you're so soulful. And it's like, obviously, either I wasn't clear in my lyrics, I wasn't clear in my interviews, or I'm just not clear, and I'll never be clear to anybody, and it doesn't really make any difference. Personal evolution and entertainment don't mix. I'm not an entertainer, but I am. It's simultaneous. It's a juxtaposition.
Yeah.
So I present myself as an entertainer, and then I give an anti-performance.
Well, I was going to say, you're in the world of entertainment,
yeah,
being a musician,
yeah,
and going and doing shows in Chicago here at places like Empty Bottle.
Yeah.
I mean, you fall into that category. So being an anti-performer, an anti-entertainer, how do you get by? How do you...
People help me out. That would be ideal if it weren't considered to be a special treatment. What I feel is that within this so-called society, this is just a large version of what we used to have in small tribes. People like me always existed. Mm. People like you and all of us, every archetype, every idiosyncratic person, we always really existed. But we end up falling into things that we don't really care about, because the way society is structured now,
it conforms you in.
It conforms. But what I am is a shaman, or maybe some version of one, or something like that. I'm a storyteller. That's my work. It's not a lauding thing. It's not anything extraordinary. It's just something that I am and I do. And so back in the day, I would imagine somebody like me would be given a sustenance for that very easily. And I don't have to shout as loud. I entertain, I dance, I sing, I present my psyche, my soul. Hopefully it's some kind of reflection of people, because they're not, hopefully, ideally, they would not be so focused on my color or, you know, the sound of my voice so much as the sound. I want the sound of my voice to take them into a place that is nowhere, like a meditation. But initially, I couldn't make meditative songs because I didn't know that was the way to reach people. I thought you had to shout. And now I'm discovering a whole new thing. And I want to take people with me, but I'm not famous and important enough.
I think they have to want to go, too, right? That's part of it.
There's a good amount of people that want to go. And it's easier to want to go nowadays. And I think that going is probably to all of our benefit. We should all go to nowhere. And I don't mean death. I mean to this place of non-categorization in our minds. When we walk the street, we're looking at things, we're trying to look at the world in a new and abstract way, and not in this preconceived way. And I'm just, I approach things like with the vigor of a child. And then all of a sudden I get turned into a 85-year-old man the minute somebody calls me a soulful brother.
My guest tonight, indie artist, musician, shaman, Willis Earl Beale, also known as Nobody. He has his new record, which is coming, new album, should be out pretty soon. He's releasing new music. He's also released Chaos Paradigm and Through the Dark. He grew up here in Chicago, and we'll talk about that right after the break here. My guest, Willis Earl Beale, tonight on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, the artist, musician, shaman, Willis Earl Beale. He's also known as Nobody. He put out the album Through the Dark, also Chaos Paradigm as Nobody, and he's got some new music. Just came through town, played Empty Bottle, has played Pitchfork, it's pretty much been every. I mean, you've had such a career as Willis, and you're looking to make a transition to Nobody. Talk about your time before being a musician. I'm fascinated with your life because you grew up here in Chicago. You grew up in Inglewood. Music wasn't really a part of your life.
Music was no more a part of my life than anybody else's. That being said, when I always tell people I wasn't influenced by anybody, music was not a part of my life. I guess that sounds cooler. And it's true for the most part. But then when I really think about it, I can remember listening to Sade for hours. So it's like it's almost like a phantom memory or something.
Yeah.
I would say Sade, Prince. Really, that's about it. Those are the people that influenced me early on, but I wasn't making no music. I was just, I would listen to them like some people listen to mantra tapes. It didn't really occur to me specifically why I was listening to these particular artists. They just resonated with me on a totally intuitive level. And then I didn't grow up in a culture of music. Nobody played music. My mother Right. wrote songs a long time ago. Aside from listening to Sade and Prince quite a bit, I just kind of walked around. Like, I can't tell you how many times I walked past this building.
You've lived in a lot of different places. New York City, Tucson, Portland, California, wherever it's at.
Yeah.
Talk about your time here in Chicago, because it's two different times, really. It's a time of growing up and growing up, on the porches of Inglewood. And then also your second part, which is really almost being an outside artist, the idea of the Flyers.
When I was in Chicago, I felt constricted. That's why all I did was walk around. I didn't feel...
What was the constriction? What was it that made you feel that way?
All of the noise and the people. I consider myself to be highly sensitive. Not sensitive in the sense of like... poke me and I say, ow. I don't know, man. I sound like some kind of new age weirdo, but like I feel a lot of pain and it's not my own. And I don't like that. So
you're picking up on
I couldn't
the misery
hear
that's
myself.
Around you.
I couldn't right. feel anything. All I felt was loneliness here. Hmm. And I had to leave because there's too many problems in this city for a guy like me to actually be able to address in any real way, particularly when I don't even know how to do anything.
Do you like coming back to Chicago?
No.
I mean, you don't.
The only reason why I got famous is because some folks exaggerated some stuff about me, and I've been walking around Chicago for a while, and then all of a sudden I got a show at the Empty Bottle, and now I'm a home, they were saying at the time that I was a hometown hero, but I'm not a hometown hero now, I'm just another guy who got famous off Pitchfork and they promoted for a little while. And then I went away and now the next wave of people come in. And I didn't realize the infrastructure of the way things work prior to being involved in the music industry. That's why I didn't have a perspective. I just felt pain. But now I have a perspective. But unfortunately, while I'm developing this perspective, I'm getting money from the label. I'm being exposed to a lot of people that I never been exposed to. I'm evolving. That evolution can be painful. And I was evolving with people's money. I'm evolving with people's time.
Investment.
That's not wrong
for
me to evolve, but it's also not wrong for them to expect me to...
They talk about this in comedy and actors. A lot of them talk about Chicago this way, where they love Chicago because Chicago is a place where they can take risks. They can fall on their face. They can, because they're not playing with somebody else's money. They get to Los Angeles and New York and people say, you're on a sitcom, go. You don't have time to evolve. You don't have time to learn your who you are and what your voice is. You need to know that before you get that. Is that what you're talking about? The idea that in your case, you want to evolve. You want to be a different kind of musician, but the stakes get higher as you get more and more fans, more and more money, more and more support from the label.
It wasn't music that I wanted. I wasn't looking for music. I was looking for me. That is the universal struggle. That is the struggle. Okay, I want to make big, transcendent, esoteric statements with every song that I make. Unfortunately, sometimes you're going to make a song like, Too Dry to Cry, where people don't associate transcendent, philosophical, spiritual viewpoints to you. Their tribute, that guy's got a great soul voice. And
this will be good on my trailer.
That's the frustrating thing about it. It's no great tragedy. I'm fortunate to be on this show. I'm fortunate to have been pushed to a certain point because I'm still milking that publicity. Unfortunately, that publicity now I've got to try and I got to take the Facebook page and go, all right, 18,000 likes. Like this. Like it. Like it. Please like it. And not only like it, but try to understand it, because I believe that if you understand me, if you can understand my music and my performances, and you're not one of the one-third of people who walk out of my shows, you can understand yourself. And That is an anti-cult. That's an anti-church. That's an anti-philosophy, and it's an anti-performance.
Are you going to drive yourself crazy trying to will that to happen? If a third of the people just aren't going, they're just listening for the beats and they're listening for the sound, and, oh, I like this song, it's catchy. And you want them to have a bigger experience or a more emotional connection, and they just won't go there. What does that mean for you?
I don't need them. You know, I need the people that stay. And many more people sat down than walked away.
And this was the when a show in Chicago where you told the audience to sit down, don't applaud, don't clap, listen.
I went through Europe doing that.
How do people react? I mean, they got a beer in their hand, they're standing. They don't want to sit on the grubby floor. How do they usually react to you?
They're looking at me, and they're thinking about context. It's about when you're sitting, you retain things better. I want you to retain it. I don't want you to sit there or stand there like nodding your head, looking at your phone.
Yeah.
I don't want you doing that. I want you to have a holistic, organic experience. And that is completely the antithesis of a concert.
Right.
It's not a concert. It's an intervention.
But, I mean, you get to a certain point where that's the audience now. I mean, if I think about going to shows and it's half about what's on the stage, it's half about what's around you, it's the environment. People paid to be in that space, to be with that community, not necessarily to follow your direction on what you want them or how you want them to receive your art.
I want them to feel self-conscious and uncomfortable. And then I want to sing a sweet, beautiful note. And I want to confuse the hell out of them. Like, why do I feel so uncomfortable and yet so calm? Because that's how I feel.
Yeah. I think about listening today, and I listen a lot to Through the Dark, and I think about the music, and I'm like, it's a very, I mean, you really.
You listen to that? Thank
I did.
You.
And you and it paints a picture. And, you know, you can concentrate on what you're saying, you can concentrate on what the music is, and in the case of this, it's a mood, it's emotional, very depressing kind of music.
Oh, you think so?
I thought so, but that's what I want to ask you. The package together, when you put all that stuff together, it creates a scene. It creates a thing. Put it this way, that I drive into work and I'm driving down the street and listening to that record and passing the same place that I pass 40,000 times, I mean, in the same intersection, same. It looks different when Willis Earl Beale is on the car stereo. Is that the idea? I mean, are you trying to create mood music, the idea of some sort of ethereal background music for the life that we're living?
I just wanted to create a euphoric state with my music, like an emotional, vulnerable, euphoric state. And I wanted it to be deviant from something that R. Kelly might sing or something that Al Green might sing. See, R. Kelly and Al Green are great artists, but they're not, I don't know what they're trying to do. But when you put a bunch of black guys with strong voices together, that is a marginalization. When you say, oh, well, you know, you sound like this guy.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm not that guy. That guy is that guy. What I'm trying to do for you is I'm trying to give you something from myself. I'm not trying to sound or be anybody else. And I do want to create mood music. Because I'm a missionary from nowhere. I don't relate to politics. I don't relate to all these different schemes that people have.
What do you relate to? Myself.
I relate only to myself. And hopefully I try to relate to other people through how I feel.
Is that partially, I mean, as we sit here and do this interview, you've got the Lone Ranger mask on. The eye holes are kind of glossed over. You got a hat on.
Yeah.
I mean, you're almost in disguise.
Well, you know, you would say that. You know, it's like, but it's not really much of a disguise because you can still see me coming a mile away. It's a presentation that I do specifically for entertainment purposes, even though this is radio. It's just like.
Do you take it off when you leave the building? Because when I came and got you out of the lobby, you had it on.
Sometimes I wear it just to see how people are going to react to it. Because it's basically the same size as a pair of large sunglasses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you'd be surprised. If I take the thing off, the mask off, and put the glasses on, people won't. It's okay. But the fact that the eye holes are there, but they can't see the eyes, is problematic. I've been told
really?
By bus drivers or whatever, could you please remove your mask? But they won't ask me to remove my sunglasses. It's a psychological thing. And I like
Yeah.
I like psychology.
Of all people I've met and been on the show, you do. There's something about you that, I mean, you really have dug into messing with the normal interactions of human beings and the psychology of just sort of living life, and you seem to have dug in and created art out of it. It's pretty intriguing.
I wish it was more intriguing. I wish it was intriguing to the extent that Donald Trump is intriguing. I wish it was on that attention, because I believe that you can wipe me away and take all the things, take my music, throw it in the trash can. But if people could just grasp the simple concept that I'm saying, the simple feeling of being a human, and take that with them, then they could see the connection that we have, the connection that we have with our planet, the connection that we have with each other. What do love songs have to do with politics? Nothing, because politics aren't real. Love is real. I feel love. I feel anger, but I feel anger because I feel love.
Aren't politics just a way to get to those feelings? I mean, people get angry because it's not what they believe in, or they love the fact that they love, you know, some policy that's happening in Washington.
They lose sight of themselves, and that is the ultimate crime. It's not a crime for our oppressors. Oppressors oppress. I'm not mad at Donald Trump. Why? I don't know him. He's got nothing to do with me except when he affects my life. And so... if people would just have this awakening, like, the revolution is not going to be televised and it won't be on the radio. The revolution is inside. You can't beat a revolution into somebody any more than you can overthrow a government. We don't need to overthrow nothing. We don't even need to leave this construct of society. All we got to do is just, like, you know, listen to whoever you want to listen to. Be whoever you want. But know your brothers and sisters. Don't step over the homeless man to go put money in the charity basket. Feel. That's just what I'm for. You know?
Willis Earl Beale, also known as Nobody, musician, artist from Chicago, now lives, where are you living now?
Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, Arizona. New chapter for Nobody, right?
That's where this record came from, Tucson.
That's great. Well, the new record will be out. When's it going to be out? When it's ready?
It's already ready. It's going to be coming out sporadically over the course of the next 3 months on 3 different labels.
Willis, it was a pleasure talking with you, and I can't thank you enough for sharing your insights, and good luck with your career.
You're smarter than a lot of professional interviewers. And I know you're smarter than a lot of professional interviewers, because even if what you're giving me is like nice responses,
it's just, yeah, right.
I could tell that at the very least you understand the neuroses. You're doing me a favor. You're giving me a little bit of what I want, you know, and that's nice.
Yeah.
You ought to do that for guests.
Yeah.
That's nice. Thank you.
I'm just sitting at the table thinking about me, with my moccasins on and waiting by my phone, with my half-mast eyes like a tearless drone. I am the